Good afternoon, everybody, and a Cead Míle Fáilte to you all. 100,000 welcomes. We're absolutely delighted to have you here with us this evening for what I can only describe as the most amazing project with first and second class girls and boys at Merlin Woods School. This has been a really joyful project and playful, and you're definitely going to see lots of this evening. So I'm going to start with a quote by Colm, our artist, which is at the beginning of the report. And the report is on the website, and there's some printed reports for you that you can get on your way out. And he says about creating space. It's creating space for them to become who they are. The confidence and the passion with all the messiness that comes from being a human being. We are not all great at everything, but it's nice to give things your best go. I suppose that's at the heart of it, is what I think creating space is. So maybe just a little bit of the history of creating space. It was inspired by a three-year project at the Victoria Theatre in New York, which demonstrated how engagement with the arts benefit and enhanced young children from disadvantaged areas and in their lives. The initial discussion about creative space started in spring 2023, but actually, Aisling is after telling us it started a long time before that. As we all know, I think working in any sector now, when you're looking for funding, it just takes a long time to get to that place. But it was at the time when we were coming out of 2 years of COVID lockdown, with the various impacts that COVID had on society, but particularly on young children. And when the Barbaro team made a successful application for this two-year longitudinal study, was funded by the Arts Council and Lives to Good Foundation, a Galway-based philanthropic organisation. And the initial team who established and spearheaded this project for Barbaro, the project coordinators at the time, was Bryony Hussey, who's with us today, and Kirsty Warren. And they were supported by the Barbaro team. And this innovative 2 years project, educational residency, was facilitated by Colm O'Foglu at Merlin Woods School, a primary school in Dowishka, Galway, and it ran from September 2023 to June 2025. So Merlin School, Woods School, for those of you that maybe don't know the Galway area, is based in Dowishka, and it's a location the areas of low socioeconomic status. However, the school does not have DESH status. The area is underdeveloped and the school community is largely, but not exclusively, from migrant and ethnic minority groups. So when Barbaro and the school came together, the collaboration and the partnership between Barbaro and the principal, Paul O'Connor, and the teachers at Merlin Woods School started and planned this project. Now, there have been some changes to the Barbaro team over that time. Bryony went off on maternity leave, which was much to the delight of the children in the school. And she might tell you herself, but I do know they gave her lots of advice about babies and baby names and things like that. And Kirsty moved on to pastures new, but still remains in contact. Their role was taken over by Andrew Ormsby, who I know is here today as school project manager. Now, Colm, as part of this project, visited Merlin Woods School twice a week, every fortnight from September 23 to June 25. And he facilitated and collaborated with 45 children in class 1A and 1B. First class children aged between 6 and 8, and then who then went on to be second class children from 7 to 9 years old. In year one, the teachers were Aoife de Prayer and Melissa Donoghue. And in year two, Aoife de Prayer remained with the group and Amanda Rain was the second teacher. They were also, Eileen and Carmel were the SNAs. So it was really a whole big family affair. When I look at this project, I see two streams. Children as artists and children as audience. And starting with the children as audience. It says on the briefing for today's document that they went to four live performances. They went to five. They went to the Town Hall Theatre three times. They went to the Black Box and they went to the O'Donoghue Theatre. Imagine that for young children between 6 and 8 to have those experiences. Like, I just think that's wow. And often, I suppose, I'm coming here with a very different, maybe a number of different hats, but one of them is that my hat as a volunteer for Barbara, and I can honestly say to you that I have stood at the Town Hall Theatre and watched children coming in for shows where I'm volunteering to let them in the door. And the light in their eyes, the excitement, the amazement, the imagination of what might happen. Like, it's such a privilege to be that children can have this opportunity, and it should be for everybody. The other thing, I suppose, is that the other part was children as participants. And Colm will tell you about those three primary elements to that: the first class news, the common ground, and if I could change the world. This project is underpinned by the UNCRC, as is all the work of Barbara, children's rights, and particularly Article 31, children's rights and access to the arts, but also to play. And you'll see that clearly evident through everything you see today. I think for me, it's one of the best examples I have seen of active participation where voice, choice and listening is respected. Children are listened to, respected and heard. And when we think about the Lundy model of participation, you will see that space, voice and audience is throughout. And hopefully this evening, we will be one more step closer to influence. You as an audience, as being an influencing group, but also to the people that you can influence at policy level. Anyone that knows me knows that I, you know, everything I do is based on the voice of the child, or the rights of the child, or the image of the child. And I know that every day that Colm went into those classes, that his image of the child was that of a competent, capable child that had 100 languages and multiple intelligences. We know also that children reach their highest potential when they're in an environment that is nurturing and caring and meets their basic care needs. And that happened every day that I was fortunate enough to be in Merlin Wood School, the nurturing and the care of the children in that school. We also know that their psychological needs, their basic psychological needs for autonomy, competence and relatedness was met in this project. And relationships were the key to everything and the cornerstone of the project, starting with the initial selection of the school, the recruitment of the artist. So our panel today, and sorry that I've gone on so long, but I just wanted to give you a background. We have Bryony Hussey, who is the outreach project manager from Barbara. We have Paul O'Connor, who's the principal of Merlin Wood School. We have Colm O'Foglu, who's the artist. I'm naming them as you're coming, rather than seats. And we've Dr. Shirley Ann Godfrey, researcher and author of the project report, who also graduated yesterday with her PhD. So can we begin? Bryony, thank you very much for being here. Can you start maybe from the beginning, Bryony? How was the school chosen? What was the artist recruitment procedure like? I'm going to give you all of these, yeah, and then you can just tell me. Okay. How did the development of the collaboration and the relationship with school work? What was the initial laying down of the foundations, which are so important? And what was important to Barbara?
So, well, we start at the beginning. As Ashan alluded to, we got a chance to do this because of successful funding that Elaine very kindly worked hard on. And when I joined Barbara in 2022, I'd come back from living abroad for 15 years, and we had Kirsty Warren in Barbara, who had a lot of schools knowledge. So the two of us worked on this together from the very beginning. And we went back to the original proposal after the delays of COVID to look at, you know, what was the nexus of why we applied for this as a company and what do we feel we could do to serve the community, whether it be school, children, artists, or all three. So when we reviewed that again, I suppose it's a bit like, do you start with the artist? Do you start with the school? And I guess my own background being a socially engaged artist with my own practice and often very site specific, we focus more on the location. So, okay, underserved community groups in East Galway, who does that fit? So that fit kind of five schools really. And we reached out to those schools directly because we already had narrowed down an area of Galway that we wanted to focus on and deepen our relationships. And really the process started in after my first festival in 2022. Myself and Christy spent the time post-festival up to the Christmas designing what we would do, who we would reach out to. And we started talking to, I suppose, the key people in Galway that you would talk to when you're developing a project like this, like Joanna McGlynn, who's the regional manager for Creative Associates, which is an arts council funded project with people who are not from Galway. It's a fantastic initiative that has some similarities with this project, but I suppose we wanted to offer something unique that was different. And Joanna had a lot of knowledge of how to be the kind of interlocutor between the school and the artist to make things gel well. So how do you fulfill the curriculum needs that a school has while also bringing the integrity of an artistic practice to children and not diluting that into a prescriptive, oh, we'll do this today and that's the outcome, you know, but to be open with your practice, how do you do that effectively? So Joanna was great in guiding us about how to, I suppose, how to approach the school, you know, talking about the commitments, what the landscape was like in Galway. Having worked in London all my working life, I didn't really know that information here. So I was relying on Kirsty, this previous application, and Joanna McGlynn's very kind information. And also was very inspired by projects like Room 13, which is a project that started in Scotland, all about a residency in a school, but it was more of a studio practice in a school. So what happens if you have a space the children can join and kind of participate and opt in? So I was conscious we're coming to a school that, you know, the kids haven't necessarily signed up to this, but the school is on board and we're bringing in an artist. So I guess for me, the genesis of that and the location and thinking so specifically about the needs of that area, it was really important for the school to be part of the recruitment of the artist, for the artist to be able to be involved in the conversations about the logistics and the time planning and all the things that, I mean, I've been on the side of it as the artist, the school and the organizer. And you're often left out of that thinking, oh, you're just here for the art making bit or the creative bit. But actually, you're not fundamental in the decision making process. So I tried to orchestrate that with Kirsty, where we included the feedback of what our community was saying, both the school, the children and other local organizations or partner groups. And then also to go in and do a needs assessment. So it was actually really fortuitous. When we were emailing schools about this, Aoife emailed us like the day before. Well, you messaged us on Facebook being like, are you bringing anything from Barrow? We really want more stuff from Barrow. And you'd come to Barrow the year before, but you hadn't come, like the school hadn't come since 2015. So there was a big gap. And clearly we weren't, you know, reaching out and connecting with you as much as we could and should have been. So it was really fortuitous timing that we'd been going out to schools to make this proposition and you also wanted this. So I feel a bit that it was slightly stars aligned that, you know, originally Dwyshka was named in the proposal and we accidentally ended up in Dwyshka, partly by design, but partly by osmosis. I think the fact that you really wanted that commitment, you wanted to see a meaningful, sustainable project in your school. You'd had BLAST and that was good, but had its challenges and its limitations, which is a sort of a short program of, I think, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that. It's, you know, and you come in and you do a specific art activity and you leave again. And I'm conscious with things like residencies, especially in school spaces, you know, you're coming into a pre-existing dynamic. So we really needed a place that was going to be open to experimentation. And I think that was a big, big part of why this has been so successful is like school really wanted that. And that, you know, it was going to be a commitment of their time and efforts. So, you know, and we were really fortuitous to have great links like Joanna and knowledge from Kirsty. And so I really, you know, I didn't do this alone. I really relied on all of that information. And and try to, yeah, put that together with the team. And I suppose a big part of that as well is the children's input. So we went in and the needs assessment was kind of a meeting with staff to talk about, you know, is there a creative need for the school? Do the teachers want to have more creativity in their teaching? You know, what's the need from the idea of the fact that you don't have DESH status? What impact does that have? And how could this maybe improve that? So you've got some leverage. Okay, look, we've done this, but we're not getting this, you know, we're not getting the opportunities that DESH would give us. You know, would this maybe give you that advantage in the future? So talking about micro and macro kind of benefits and impacts, not just for the funders, Life's Too Good, who were really open and very understanding of how long this took, but also just on the classroom level, you know, what impact will it have on the curriculum and what impact will it have on schools and meals and opportunities that the children will have far beyond Babro. So we did all that, but we also talked to the children and asked them what they wanted. And it wasn't exactly the group. So it was the class we had for first class that year. So it was a different group that joined this project. But, you know, they'd had music generation in, they'd been doing instrumentation and more kind of learning in lesson format, but they hadn't had an artist and they hadn't had the opportunity to do more with that singing and do more with play. And they mentioned a couple of things. And actually, I looked through the list in preparation for this and we did everything they wanted to do, you know, and more. So, and they had amazing questions. They'd been to Babro in 22 in October, bearing in mind, I didn't see them until January 23. So they were asking like, how long does it take to make a play? How much does it cost? How did they come up with the characters? And also their idea of Babro is that we made all the shows. So it was really interesting to see that they're like, okay, you host things, but what does that mean? So I hope by the end of the 2 years, they have a different conception of Babro and a different understanding of what it takes to make things. But yeah, that's the long way of saying that that's the kind of process. But then the recruitment of an artist, that was about 3 months. So we did an open call and an information kind of Zoom call just to give people a chance to ask questions. Colm dialed in from his car and asked a question. It was very like directive and clear. And then we interviewed 5 people from a short list of, I think it was 14 applications that we had. And the school were involved in the short list. You guys were involved in the interview process.
The grilling.
I corralled poor Aoife into the interview process, which I hope you've forgiven me for since. I know it was, you're like myself. We prefer to be behind the scenes. But yeah, I think it was really integral because it made a difference. You could see whether there's going to be a dynamic in the room that's going to make sense in the long term. You know, 2 years is a long time of working relationships. And for the children to get the best benefit out of it possible, the adults have to respect each other. I know all too well from being either the classroom teacher, you know, like technician or person in the classroom or the artist, that if the adults aren't respecting each other, the children won't respect their art form. They won't take their own voices seriously. They'll read the room. So it was really, really key that everyone got on with each other and that if there were challenges, which of course there will be, that we could squash them and open them out and, you know, agree to disagree and be professional and respectful. So I think that interview process was really important. And we had some questions that were tricky, but mostly to say, you know, I was thinking a question in particular was sort of like describing how you would deliver a program, which was kind of my trick question to hope that the person would say, well, I'm not delivering, I'm listening to the young people, you know. So of course, Colm did that. So thankfully we had the right candidate. And, you know, and also asking about the important steps of what it means to really listen. So I think we learned a lot from doing that. And in retrospect, I think I probably, you know, would do maybe the school recruitment slightly differently if I had been involved from the very beginning. But I think given the fact that I had come in at a point where there was already funding. Yeah. But, you know, there's no perfect way. It's a bit chicken and egg. Do you start with the school? Do you start with the community? Do you start with the artist? So that's the way in which we started. And I think trying to have that all the decision-making were, you know, we started planning as adults before we met the children from May till September. So we had some time before term ended and then some time before coming into the classroom to have those questions of like, well, how do we meet them? And what do we say about them ourselves or about Babro, about Colm before we come into the room? And it's often those details which seem really small, but you don't have time for in a lot of other projects. So I think those were, yeah, I suppose that's the stuff I can touch on. And then I was there for a term and then I went on maternity and thankfully things sailed very beautifully and the children have made some incredible work with Colm. But I think because we set the foundations for the listening space, not just for the children, but to listen to each other, which I think is harder because listening to the children is our common goal, but listening to each other can be hard if you're like, well, this is how we do things, or this is what the curriculum asks of me, or this is what an artistic practice is like. Those things are going to butt heads a bit, but I think we had such a lovely warmth and openness, and I'm really grateful. Like, we definitely would have picked you for that reason, because you were willing to do that work, which was going to take time.
And tell me, Bryony, did you take the advice of the children? Of what advice did they give you?
The names, yeah. So, well, they wanted me to squat, which was really, like, just to, like, kind of do all these gymnastic things as if to test could I really do that at this point, because I was very, very heavily pregnant, which I tried to rise to the occasion. I think I made about halfway. And to their credit, they did it with me. It was an interesting experiment. But they had been doing bookmaking with columns, so they made me two lovely books each class of names that I could call Angus. So sorry if this is their first time hearing.
Angus wasn't one of their suggestions.
No.
They really thought they should name her child after them.
Yeah, but they also had really beautiful drawings of what, like, being a parent or giving birth would look like, which were also really intriguing and gave me a good laugh in the very early days of my first child going into the world. So I'm really grateful to them. And yeah, whether it was the children we met in the needs assessment or the children that have been with us for 2 years, like, it's definitely a palpable buzz every time I've been back to Merlin Woods about who Babro is and that it feels like it's theirs, which I really hope, because at the end of the day, that's who we're serving. That's why we're funded. So if they don't feel like things are being represented on stage or in the company or in a project, then yeah, hopefully they're knocking on our door saying, hey, just like you did, hey, are you coming out to Babro? Like, come out to us. So yeah, that's kind of the genesis.
Thank you very much, Bryony. Paula, can you tell me about the initial conversations, the working together with Babro and with Colm? How did having an artist in the school, on the ground with you and the teachers and the non-teaching staff of Merlin Wood School, tell us a bit about the logistics, maybe the challenges, the surprises, feedback from parents and staff. It's a bit of everything. Just tell it all.
I suppose our side of it. As you know, have been mentioned a couple of times, that we don't have that status. So delivering equality in schools would be a status that's given to schools in terms of extra funding, homeschool liaison teachers, different advantages, lower class numbers, etc. Which, not just the funding given to a school, but it often opens doors into lots of other things. So with us not having that, and I'm principal at school nearly 16 years since we started, I've been very conscious about how do we give opportunities? How do I sidestep that? How do I get something else in? So that's the culture of school. You know, it isn't being handed to us. How do we knock on doors to get it? And I remember Aoife kind of knocking on my door going, and I feel Aoife should be up here. She's staying out of the limelight. When you have a culture of we can do things, we can get, how do we get this done? How do we give the best opportunities to our children? That was how it all kind of started for me, in that it was Aoife being the driving force, who's a very naturally very creative person and really embodies what a teacher should be in terms of listening to children, the energy, the positivity, the creativity. And I feel I always need to encourage that and let teachers go with projects that suit their personalities. I wouldn't feel I'm naturally a creative person, but I would give that, you know, whether by getting music generation, whether I feel I need to give those opportunities to the children, because I think in our community, mostly my migrant community, many who have left very difficult circumstances. We have an IPASS centre beside us. We have people in social housing. We've got lots of different things going on, and some are just economic migrants, but the arts aren't necessarily a priority. You know, when you're in survival mode, the arts aren't necessarily a priority. So when Aoife kind of started that conversation, I was like, go for it. Absolutely. So I think a huge reason that the project has been so successful, Brian, you mentioned the foundations. Absolutely. Because being the school principal, I think structured, I think organized. Yes, I want to let things flow a little bit, but within control. Like, I'm, it's organized chaos. Or, you know, my husband would laugh. He's like, you're a benign dictator. You know, it's just... Bright, for me, you created a lot of that security because you opened up the conversations, but you were highly organized. You kind of had the perfect mix of the creative, knowing about the arts, knowing about, you know, what it means to bring a project to school, and, you know, keeping us on track. And I was cautious. I was excited about it, but I was cautious as well. I was like, okay, this is going to take a lot of time. So on different levels, how is this going to affect our curriculum time? How do we protect other areas? I have an obligation to make sure that the curriculum is taught, and yes, the arts, but that the arts is part of it. And, you know, with the flexibility of the curriculum, like, teachers might give extra time, you're teaching in an integrated way. So you could kind of marry things. But it was a concern, you know, over a 2-year project. This is given a lot of time. This needs to work. It really has to work. So if we were given at the time, you know, Fabro had sourced the funding, the expertise, like, we had to kind of make it work. It could only work with everybody buying into it. And, you know, it was a case of going, who is going to be the right fit? And it was a little bit nerve-wracking when you're talking about, you know, what will it look like, what the projects look like. We had no idea, because it was the voice of the child. So when we were selecting and interviewing Cullum and giving the grilling, like, we were keeping it really broad, and eventually, like, you know, he's absolutely the right fit because he has everything. He's a bit of everything, and a master of everything, not just jack of all trades, master of everything. And also with his teaching background as well. So we're like, he has to get that. We have to have Kuntas Misu. It was like, we have to have records. We have to stand over this. So it was all of that was in the mix, very much so. And there were challenges, and especially the first term. And, you know, I think Aoife would be a lot more relaxed than I would be. So even when Aoife was going, oh, I'm a bit worried. You kind of went, oh God, like, you know, just like, you know, but we're kind of, we've nothing to show for it yet. We're a few weeks, we've nothing to show for it. And I remember contacting you, okay, I think we need to have a conversation, and, you know, how do we make this work? Because Colin was coming in, and there was a lot of finding our feet. There was a, you know, we were talking about it earlier, just the fact that even it started with a lot of whole class work. I went, this isn't going to work. We're not hearing, you know, all the children. So Colin was having to take small groups. So he was having to take groups to, we set out a table in the corridor, and he was having to take kids out in small groups. So we had to go from whole class down to small class. And there was a lot of start, you know, trust the process, Paula. Like, I'm going to just trust it. And we kind of had to lean into that a little bit. But the fact that we had been able to raise it as a concern, and the fact that, you know, you completely got that, and you were a great buffer, you know, because a huge part of the success of the project was the relationships. Nobody wants to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, you can't turn around and go, Colin, what are you doing with those children? Do you know?
And the answer probably was, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There was that element of it.
And I thought that was an okay answer.
And I was hyperventilating.
But that's why it's useful to have the person in between.
You really did need that. And to kind of say, right, this, you were like a chairperson. You were hearing everybody's voice, and okay, this is how we bring it together. So there was challenges like that. There was the, you know, the aspect of how we commit as a staff to it over time. And it was lovely that even now, when we were in the other day and just going into the staff room, making yourself a cup of tea, like, that people know you, everybody knows you. And time was a huge aspect of the success, because with us knowing that it's a 2-year project, we were able to kind of go, okay, we're not going to rush it at the start, because there'll be more sessions and there'll be more. It wasn't a 10-hour or a 12-hour project. It also gave more buy-in from the parents. One of the things was at the end of the first year, when we did the project, which so beautifully tied with, I can't, like chicken and the egg, I can't remember which came first, was it decide or think about what your baby name would be. And then that led on from my recollection to the project of the children looking at their own names. And we got the parents to, and got the parents to record in their own language what they named their child, why, and feel the love in the recordings. I remember getting goosebumps in the hall. You know, we'd all these little symbols and photographs all around the floor, beautiful lighting, and just these recordings going. And you're going, this is magical. But we had to chase our parents. You know, you, as I said, a lot of them, this wasn't a priority. Many of our parents, they're working, a lot of them are working shift work. One does day shift, one does night shift. You know, sending a recording to school was not a priority. We had to chase and chase and chase. That was the end of the first year. And then by the end of the second year, we had almost full attendance. I think there was only one or two parents who didn't make it. Full attendance, every child's family represented. And most of them had two parents at the end of year. If I could change the word, you know, we had parents who had changed commitments. I was meant to be, I can't remember, I was in Barcelona. I think one parent said, I was meant to be in Barcelona for something this weekend. And I changed my plans. This few days, I changed my plans to be here. So that took time for that relationship to build up and that importance to build up. Don't know if, is there anything else? But, they were kind of the main things. That and different parts, but I loved about it as well that, you know, no more than me trying to encourage staff like to shine in their own particular areas, different parts of this project really resonated with different children. Mm-hmm. You know, it is always a worry, like when a child at only first or second class level is already saying, you know, I'm not good at school, I don't like school, I'm not staying at school, you know, I couldn't see himself beyond. But I remember, you know, you showed me some of one particular child's work and he is just a gorgeous drawer, you know, and the sketches he did. And he just started to take a lot more pride in his work at everything and could see himself kind of represent it. And kind of you're trying to draw and see what is the niche for each child.
100 languages and their multiple intelligences.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And just so much of the project was so perfect for our school. And I suppose, yeah, grown out of the voices of the children. You've got, you know, the parents, the connectedness with the different languages. You had different art forms. You had the fact that, you know, so much of this was digital, so they were able to share it with grandparents who weren't living in Ireland, everything.
I know myself, I had been there at the very beginning and then they did their news. And even at that early stage, the difference between heads down and kind of half afraid to interact and then their news and then at the end, at the exhibition. And I suppose really looking at the feedback that the children gave about the exhibition was like, I was really embarrassed, but I was so proud. And my mom and dad were so proud of me, all of that. So
the final exhibition, I loved that so much when they talk about if I change the world, the depth that was in what they said. And if that was just a surface level interaction, that wouldn't have happened. You wouldn't get that. Yeah. And the safety of being able to talk about it. You know, you've got 7 and 8 year old children, you know, really worried about homelessness because it affected their family, really worried about cancer because it affected their family, really worried about, you know, money. I'm like, he said, like, it was heartbreaking and joyful to watch on so many levels. I was like, these children should not have to be worrying about these.
Out of the mouth of babes, and I suppose, are you absolutely dying to see what happened? So Colm, the wonderful artist, is going to go through some of the work of the project. And I know you're going to talk about the first class news and the common ground and if I could change the world and show some beautiful videos and pictures. I also know that you're going to, you know, tell us about the children's voice and and the children's voice will speak for themselves. But I also know you'll also share the striking and amazing things that you've learned from the children on this. So let the artist take it away.
I suppose if everybody closed their eyes here right now and finished this sentence, and Shirley-Ann was so fantastic going in, because I think sometimes assessment of things always happens from our grown-up need to report things as opposed to ask the actual questions that these young people will understand. So Shirley-Ann asked them, and this was after 2 years, an artist is... So take 1 minute. If you were asked, an artist is dot, 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 what would you say? Because when I heard this, I kind of thought this is the most lovely reflection because it reflects everybody who's involved in the project. So they were mirroring what they had seen, what they had experienced. And words came up that I wouldn't necessarily associate with myself are with artists, which is amazing that after 2 years, so you can open your eyes now, hold on to what you thought an artist is, dot, dot, dot. And I give you Rangado Merlin Woods and Shirley-Ann's version of what an artist is.
An artist is...
An artist is createful.
An artist is createful. Lovely.
An artist is very intelligent.
Very intelligent and creative.
Open-minded.
Open-minded.
Creative and calm, kind of.
An artist is beautiful drawing.
Okay, thank you.
An artist is a person that likes art and is creative and thoughtful.
Thank you.
An artist is a person that is very creative and has loads of ideas.
Thank you.
An artist is creative, nice and friendly.
An artist is positive.
Positive, thank you.
An artist can be anyone or anything.
An artist can be whatever he wants to be.
So after 2 years, that's what they thought an artist was. Day one, an artist is coming into the class. That's not what they thought. And I think there's that sense of even the term artist in residence. We're talking about a visual art, but I'm no good at drawing. And the really thing, beautiful thing that happened with creating space is that after 2 years, an artist is now, well, Hannah said beautiful drawings because Hannah does beautiful drawings. But actually, all of the rest of the things are all the most beautiful parts of humanity, of being a person, really. And maybe that gets more expression maybe through the arts for them. And the idea that actually an artist's tools or ammunition is ideas. One of the kids, one of the parents said to them, what did you learn today? They said, we didn't learn anything. We were thinking our own things. And actually, when you think about that, isn't that like really amazing? Shirley-Ann will say it later, one of the kids at the end of it said, I'm not going to spend any time on YouTube with other people's ideas. I'm going to have my own because they're well able to have their own. And I suppose, you know, me being a multidisciplinary practitioner and music being and composition being my, go-to, I think everybody kind of thought that music would figure a lot more in it than it actually did. And we did all these different taster sessions with lots of different things to let ideas come to the fore. And actually, it didn't take that musical turn, although music, myself and Bri were talking earlier on, and music became a kind of a palate cleanser, I think, between things to set tones for when we were working, we'd have music on in the background. But
you'd play music. It wasn't just music on. They'd arrive to you playing music, yeah. And then that would set the scene for whatever we were thinking about today. So. but yeah, it was like the scaffolding around.
Yeah, but an artist can be anything she wants to be.
Yeah.
And is everybody and everything. Mm. So actually, an artist's currency is actually their ideas. It's their creativity, their createfulness, which was a new word to me. And I looked it up. And actually, creation and beauty, beautiful and creative, if you amalgamate them, and it's in usage in America. So ahead of the curve, our students in second class, createful. What is an artist? They are creative. Thank you to everyone involved for being brave enough to take this on. Because if you go into a job interview and you're asked, what are you going to do? And your answer is, I don't know. And then there's an acceptance of the kind of chaosmos. So the kind of chaos in the creation of a world. And work through the frustration of that and come out the other side. Because I would have priorities that I would have, you know, championed. And Aoife had her priorities and Babarow had their priorities. And I suppose trying to navigate that and the inherent frustration of starting with this kind of work. And I think, you know, we can all read these beautiful books on Reggio Emilia where the atelier and everybody's there and it's beautiful. And it all seems to happen to music with the soft, gentle breeze lifting it. And I suppose the pupil-teacher ratio might be 1 to 8. Yeah. And you have an artist in the room and you have a teacher and it's not a classroom, it's an atelier and all of this. 22, 24 students, neurodivergent, additional needs in the class. It's not that. And yet that's what our aspiration was. That's what our hope was. So we had to find our way in ways that were going to work for everyone. Aoife came up with the splendid notion that we could chalk some of this up as oral language work. Because where does it fit in the curriculum? And I suppose that, you know, the new integrated curriculum is great, but we're still very compartmentalized in this is the English class, or this is the maths class, or this is the art class. So it's not like kids can switch on the art part of their brain or the maths part of their brain. And actually, in a lot of the work we were doing, it was everything. And it was HBSE quite a lot. And I know we spoke a lot about well-being, especially after COVID, and young people, like Paula said, who wouldn't necessarily identify as Irish or as Polish. They might be born in Ireland to Polish parents, and yet that was problematic. So coming to St. Patrick's Day, a harp and a shamrock and all of these kind of signifiers that we all relate to and ground us didn't seem to have the same resonance. I'm getting back to your question. I haven't forgotten it. So basically, we did first class news. I could show first class news or we could go straight to Common Ground because I'm just kind of thinking that the time is maybe... Show a bit of first class news. So this was their first little PTC and they were going to see a show. They were going to see a show in Barbaro. So we were working on rhyming things. And it was lovely. Interestingly enough, one out of 44 had been to a live performance on the stage. So the word for actor, stage, audience, all the infrastructure that goes behind that was completely foreign. It was Netflix. It was all of that. So the idea of going, I'll show you, there's a gorgeous kid called Eddie and they were allowed to score things out of 5 and Eddie gives it 0. And I said, now, Eddie, it's from 1 to 5. And so can you, and he said 0. And that's fine. You don't have to like everything. We often talk about pineapple on pizzas and that's, you know, kind of contentious issue. But he wanted to give it 0 because it wasn't a movie. And yet Eddie went to see the wonderful Chateaudet by the equally wonderful Akram Khan company. And he thought that was better than any movie he had ever seen. And he was especially moved by the actor when they wrapped their legs underneath themselves and they were looking for money in Delhi or whatever, and it was clear they were an amputee. And he had never been to a theatre. Polar Bear and Penguin didn't fare so well with 0 out of 5. Akram Khan was getting like infinity out of 5. So this is First Class News, and it's a little edited version. And they'd all lost their teeth, are in the process of losing them and getting them again.
Hello and welcome. This is First Class News. Today's story. First Class are going on a trip. We are going on a bus. We're going to see a show.
We are going to see a show.
With Babbo.
The Polar Bear and the Penguin.
In the town hall.
Let's find out what they think about it all.
We're going to go to Babbo and see a show called Polar Bear and the Penguin.
We are going to see the Polar Bear and the Penguin.
We're going to take a bus there. We're going to a town hall. It's like a big building and a theatre for our children only.
And I'm excited about the show because I haven't really been in a play. I mostly watch the TV with my family to watch some movies.
I feel so excited. It's so going to be fun.
A hilarious story.
I'm really excited.
I think it's going to be funny.
I think it's going to be hilarious.
I think that there's going to be some sad parts in it, but I'm still excited.
They'll be silly.
I think it will be a happy show.
And they're going to live a happy dream.
It was pretty good.
4 out of 5.
The penguin's name was Later, and the penguin said that let's save it for later, because Later is the baby's penguin's name.
It was bad because there was no movie. Zero.
I liked when the poor bell eat all the fish. F5.
It was very nice
because I like penguins. 5 out of 5.
The Polar Bear and the Penguin was brilliant.
A 5.
4 out of 5.
It was perfect for me.
4 out of 5.
The Polar Bear and the Penguin, it was fun.
And the best part was when the Polar Bear ate all the fishes.
4 out of 5.
10 out of 10.
This is a car. So this is a car. So this is the show you opened.
My favorite part was the beginning too.
5 out of 5. It was really nice and I loved it.
It was really cool.
5 out of 5 then.
Okay, 5 out of 5.
That was First Class News.
Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And you saw Brandon there, and so we filmed half of it before they went to see Polar Bear and Penguin, and half of it afterwards. Now, a week had elapsed since Polar Bear and Penguin, and Brandon had made a car. And actually, that was the newsworthy thing, not Polar Bear and Penguin, because the car could open. And actually, why not? Because that was the best news that day. And I suppose, I think a process like this where you can really get to know and read the signals and manage time when every student is able and prepared and happy and secure and comfortable to participate on whatever spectrum of participation that they're comfortable with on the day. So, having the 2 years was a remarkable thing. We did make the decision early on that we would introduce things on a Tuesday. A thing that came up was tut-tut-tut, which is not me giving out, but it was shorthand for time to think. And time to think became a Tuesday we start thinking about things, and then maybe Friday we start working. Because all too often it can be have your idea, execute it, it's going to dry, it's going home on Friday. And actually, that's not how we approach creative writing. We would always brainstorm, we would always allow time for things to happen. And I think even as practitioners, the Paula, Aoife would be saying, what are we doing? And I kind of have to say, I don't know, time to think. I'd have to think about that. And that's okay not to have all of the answers all the time. I suppose for an artist coming in, it's much easier to shed the mantle of the experts. That I don't have to be an expert, and I can say, I don't know, how are we going to find? How are we going to work that out? I'll have a think about it, and maybe we'll circle. Remind me next week. That's where we started off. And it was really to get them into the idea of the multiplicity of what the arts can offer. So as an artist, it's not just pretty pictures or replicating a one-time rollout workshop. And I suppose after that, Bri went on maternity leave. They made the book with all of their suggestions, including tips on childbirth, which...
Handy, yeah.
Was it handy?
More realistic.
It was. Can you do a squat heavily pregnant? And Bri did a good job. But I suppose that moved on to Common Ground, which became about their names. And I suppose there was a performative aspect to these young people where at home, the expectation was they were a Ukrainian child or a Polish child, and that was their world. And when they came to Merlin Woods, and this wasn't imposed by Merlin Woods at all, but I think that the
it's indicative of our locality. Aculturalization is a real issue.
And as well, I suppose, if we traded places, to be asked to contribute something to the school when you're in your second language, and maybe English, you mightn't have the fluency to explain yourself. So the idea was that without these signifiers, without these symbols that they could relate to, what would it be like if they created their own symbol, their own tag? So we all learned Adobe Illustrator. Just as a personal thing, I much prefer to start with real concrete materials and then digitize them. But this was such a thing. I mean, that we did sketch and we had ideas and we talked about lots of things. There was lots of talking and lots of thinking, so that was good. But it culminated in a exhibition where I was saying to Paula, I'm going to put it on the floor. And Paula was saying, can't put it on the floor, really, because it kind of looks like nobody has hung it up. And I was kind of thinking, wouldn't it be lovely, though, to come in on a journey? And I suppose I'm not going to say I'm tall, but I'm taller than some six-year-olds. But our concept of the world tends to be up here sometimes, whereas actually the ground is a place you can play, a place you can explore. And I thought, wouldn't it be lovely? I mean, it did look a bit like CSI Duishka with these kind of body outlines. But the idea was that parents came in and they had to go around and they saw an outline, and on it was a card with this symbol of a young person that symbolized them and their life and the meaning of their name. And you could open the card. Inside was their portrait. With that was the soundtrack of the parents telling us the very special stories behind why. And I suppose it kind of spoke to me, given that, you know, when we talk about diversity, a lot of times we talk about the things that make us different, that divide us. And yet there's that wonderful thing where parents, guardians have that thing, that opportunity to pick a name. And usually there's such a story behind that name and to share it. But we were adamant that we wanted to do it in the contributor's mother tongue. And then if they liked, to give us an English translation. And I think one of the fathers who came in got a bit teary, because I think it was the first time that he had the sense of his language and his culture being on an equal status as English. And because with the school, I think there was, because I set up a little recording studio and some of the parents came in and I was recording them, and they were so nervous. And it was because they were operating in their second language. And I was, I'm kind of, you know, was going to say, illiterate in about three languages, but and I'll slip into Irish all the time. So, but it turned out to be a really wonderful thing. The other thing that happens when, as a byproduct of all of this, that the other students in the school, without any prompt from any one of us, decided that they would decorate the entrance to the exhibition with all of the flags for all of the nationalities that the school represents and hello written in all of those languages. So they were adding to the conversation that had started in the hall, and it was contagious. It kind of enveloped the whole school. And I think that kind of set the opportunity then to engage, because we had said with Ash and with Barbaro initially that it would be lovely to involve the school community, the entirety. So I might play you a little bit of Common Ground. I found, hilariously, some footage of us creating some of it, which is hilarious. And you'll see the some of the tags, some of the symbols that the young people created, and then some photos of the actual exhibition.
हमारी बेटी का नाम परीसा है. परीसा नाम के मीनिंग है परी जैसी. हमने परीसा नाम इसलिए रखा है क्योंकि ये नाम परीसा की माँ से मिल रहा था. Our child name is Parisa. The name Parisa means like a fairy. The reason we chosen this special name is because her mother name, Perian. And it's a unique name like her mother's name.
Our daughter's name is Casey Sinead. The name Casey means watchful, vigilant, and brave. The name in Irish is Cahasi. The reason we chose this special name was because my mother's maiden name is Casey, and we thought it would be a special tribute to her and her family to name our baby girl after her. Her middle name is Sinead because that's my own name. So hence the reason her name is Casey Sinead.
Меня зовут Анна, моя дочку зовут Эмилия. Что означает соперник, усердный, от римского происхождения Амилиус. Мы назвали так своего ребенка, потому что это хорошо звучало в религиозных календарях, и это имя очень подходило нашей дочери. My child name is Amelia. It comes from the Latin meaning rival, laborious or eager. Comes with the Rimlin Amelius as well, and we choose this name because we found this would be nice, a very cute, soft name, which is going to be like a very international name as well for our daughter.
Der Name meiner Tochter ist Helena oder kurz Leni. Der Name bedeutet scheinendes Licht. Wir haben den Namen aus zwei Gründen ausgewählt. Zum einen gefiel mir die Geschichte Helenas in der griechischen Mythologie sehr gut. Sie war als die schönste Frau zu der Zeit bekannt und führte aufgrund der Entführung durch Paris zum Trojanischen Krieg. Der zweite Grund ist, dass Helenas Großmutter auch Helena hieß. My daughter's name is Helena or short Leni. It means shining light. We picked the name for two reasons. One, I really liked the Greek mythology story around Helena, how she was considered the most beautiful woman at that time, and also how she was one of the reasons for the outbreak of the Trojan War. The second reason was that Helena's grandmother's name was Helena too.
Una. Numele băiatului nostru este Luca. Numele Luca înseamnă aducătorul de lumină. Motivul pentru care am ales acest nume este tocmai pentru că Luca reprezintă lumina din viețile noastre. Luca va străluci mereu și va aduce fericire și zâmbete tuturor celor din jurul lui.
Our child's name is Luca.
The name Luca means bringer of light. The reason why we chose this special name is because this is what Luca is to us. He is the light in our lives. He will always shine bright and will bring happiness and smiles to everyone around him.
I do a lot of talking. I'm just after looking up at time. So, but that was Common Ground. And I suppose the work that we made over the 2 years would need to be kind of appreciated, I think, as a continuum. So it wasn't project, it's over, next thing, it's over, next thing, it's over. And I suppose there's always that kind of strange when people say, oh, it's all about the process, not about the product. There is a sense you have to be working towards something, and I think young people really respond to that too. Only what's remarkable, I think, about the 2 years isn't necessarily these artifacts. And I think Shirley-Ann will want to talk about how it's affected things kind of more than that. But that the kind of the idea of a product isn't a bad word either within a process, but it's not the only way things should be assessed.
You need to tell us about the next piece.
Yeah. I'll only play a tiny bit of the next piece because it's actually, I made these clips really long. I'm sorry. Because it was so hard not to cut out.
Yeah.
I mean, because the if I could change the world, we started with the idea. We made Shibori. This is the young people's, and actually it came up quite a lot that they really love this. But it was looking at mark making and looking at other cultures and other traditions of making art in different countries. And we were going to make a river of dreams. And then the river of dreams turned into a book called If I Could Change the World. And so in it, you're going to see a portrait. And the portraits are very specific to how each one of these young people wanted to present themselves to the world and how they wanted you as an audience to perceive them. So this is a very thoughtful, I'd say now at home, their parents were absolutely, you know, saying prayers for me with practicing their poses. But it was that the difference between a picture and a portrait is that the picture is just what somebody looks like. And a portrait is about, it tells you something about who they are. And they took this very seriously. So this is If I Could Change the World a little bit. And I'll stop it after about a minute. And Time to Think comes up in this.
Time to think. So when you tell us to think of something, you say time to think, and then we think. Because sometimes when you do a drawing, and you didn't think, it will help your brain know what to do.
Time to think. Because if you have more time to think, then your idea will be a good bit better.
So you have enough time to think to have good ideas.
Because if you just think of one idea straight away, it may not come out in the best form.
To think of something good or smart. Yeah, I think that's it.
Time to think, to take what you want to say to change the world.
I would make countries and be kind to each other because, like, countries need to be nice to each other. There's a lot of wars, and I want all the countries, like, to be no wars at all.
If I could change the world, I would cure cancer.
because some people are a lot of dying from cancer, and I don't think that's a good. And I don't think that's good.
If I could change the world, I would bring back my granddad. Because I miss him. He had white hair and white beard. And he was a bit old. I don't know how much.
Beaches, and trust me, it will be a great idea. And also, if they don't do this, then the dogs will be a saucy bugger. Is that all right, Mr. Bros?
I'm just going to stop there. It goes on for 20 minutes, and I think the. I think the lovely thing about it was it kind of encapsulates everything that the project was. I mean, there were days myself and Ethan just cracking up laughing, and we had such good fun. There were other days that things happened in the class that we had to stand in the corridor and shed a tear. And I think it's that kind of absolutely meeting people, whether you're here or whether you're there, actually as a human being, and interacting with everybody as the authentic version of themselves, and not when you grow up, you can have an idea. Because every salient problem of our time, including dogs pooping on beaches, are touched upon, you know, and every student completely believes in that. And if they were standing here right now, you could ask them why, and they would go in at length at telling you why. And I think the other lovely way of working like this is the capacity to facilitate neurodivergence, which I think is really, really important without compromising the young person or what they have to say. And it's not a competition because it's all so different. And I think we will be able to make that link for the entirety of it. If you want to have a glass of wine or not and watch it, there's the whole lot. The whole lot of the messiness of what it is to be a human being. And I think it's all of it.
Thank you very much. So now you've had a taster of what this wonderful project is. And Shirley-Ann, coming to you now, and I appreciate that you came into the project late. Can you tell us, based on, you know, the findings and the recommendations of your report, from speaking to the educators, the artists, the children, the parents, the families, whatever, you know, what are the kind of recommendations, the findings from this?
Well, I think if I had to summarize it, and this is without looking at my notes, we heard the word trust a lot. And I think the key thing here is we've got to trust our artists, we've got to trust our teachers, and trust our children. The story so far that you've heard, or the background and so on, I arrived later, but did have the privilege of observing some of this work coming into creation, and getting to talk one-to-one with them, interviewing them. And certainly, you know, if we think, first of all, if we think about growing artists as growing humans, if we had the time to listen to the rest of If I Could Change the World, what I can tell you is that, you know, it's a powerful demonstration of how they saw themselves as potential agents of change already at the age, the tender age they're at, that they, and as Colm said, this is not, you know, the sort of superficial you know, if I could change the world. They really had thought deeply about the consequences of all of these changes and what, oh, well, I couldn't do that because, but if I did this, this might happen. So these are all deeply reasoned out. So we're looking at digging very deep in terms of their that's a very hard word to say, conscientization. Was that, you get what I'm saying? The development of that consciousness and awareness of other people's, but then the empowering part is their sense of potential agency through this, through their art, through their voice. It was a very magical experience as a former teacher. So I could appreciate it with a number of hats. You know, I was in there to assess it, whatever that means. And I think we have to think this, it behoves us as teachers, artists, everybody interested in working like this with children to think about, well, what does it actually mean to say it's not all about the product? What does that actually mean in terms of curriculum? Yes, of course, they developed their art skills and improved on that, but that actually wasn't the essence of the thing. It was their development as young humans, as young artists, and as audience members that can very articulately express from zero to infinity what had hit the box. You know, they got to interview the director and meet some of the cast of When the Moon Spun Round, and Chantal was particularly impressed at their ability. You know, contrasting it with those early days of what's a stage, what's an actor, what's a performer. You know, they were interacting with this performance at a different level. It wasn't just the story level, who did this and why. Their very questions indicated that they had met it at a different level for their age and stage from what we might expect at their stage in second class. I'm going to look at my notes now in case I've forgotten anything important. But I think everyone's given a great, like, I'm only collating what the folks have told you about their practice. And Babaro and the team, they set their bar for themselves very high. My job was just to actually look at it and say, well, to what extent have they met the targets they set for themselves? And in many cases, they exceeded them. It'll be obvious from some of the anecdotes here, the enormous leaps in confidence and emotional development that were a result of the work, but also of this, as we said, over time, but also this real day-to-day interaction with this person that's an artist, and that not that it became demystified, because the mystery of the art and the magic of the work was still there, but demystifying this idea, no, that's a person who gets up in the morning and goes to the work and has to get paid, but that job's called an artist, and they have a very clear idea about what that is now. And I think that's to the extent that you know, one child who we saw on the screen is looking forward to her debut at Babaro as a performer, you know. So we're talking about the emotional side of things, the confidence, obviously imagination. The end of this film, we had money growing trees and the money would go to the homeless. We had seasonally adjusted trees. Oh no, we had the skies would pour out ice creams when it was hot and hot food when it was cold. And to come back to the neurodiverse piece, a very special piece around, we're drawing stars wrong. Maybe you can help me with this one, yeah. Colm. What yeah. was it?
Well, if the sun is a star, why isn't it shaped like a star? Because it should be pointy and shaped like a star. So actually, Anthony wanted, campaigning for, that the sun doesn't misrepresent itself, and it actually kind of, you know, fesses up and shows us that it's actually a star. The one I liked was eyes on all your fingers. And that meant then that you could be closer to the books and you could read so much quicker.
And bring back the dinosaurs.
Oh, and bring back the dinosaurs. But there would be these glass panels so that we wouldn't be in. Oh, like it was the thought behind it. And like Shirley Ann said, that it wouldn't negatively impact anything else. It was seriously thought about. But you went from very personal stories to these kind of global issues.
And underpinning all of that is this great developing sense of empathy.
The deep thought level was phenomenal. Mentioned it throughout, even from the start. Even, you know, narratives thought they were given that time to think, and it all represents, like, you know, the body would grow on trees that people who needed it didn't. Mm-hmm. Such depth.
Maybe they should become campaign managers for people who are looking for votes. If they'd follow through.
And I suppose finally then, you know, in terms of developing future audience, obviously they've had an extraordinary access to the arts that was facilitated, just in terms of getting them there on a bus and subsidized tickets. So it really was a first for many of them. And by the end of it, they're seasoned theatre goers. And obviously they were exposed to a wide variety of performance as well, ranging from sort of penguin and polar bear to, you know, fairly abstract representations. And I suppose then... Colm has spoken movingly to how all of this, you know, has contributed to the school community and that wider sense of arts participation for the parents. And even that act of ATU hosting their exhibit, some of the children said, oh, my brother goes here, or, you know, or looking forward maybe to coming there as students, that literally once they'd cross that threshold, and this is where their movie was shown in this place of learning. So,
and a huge thanks to Rita for organising that.
Yeah, but I suppose I was on a recruitment drive, as I told them. Yeah. I said, this is the university in your community, and we'd like to welcome you all here as students. But you could see the parents were sitting there, and they sat up, and they could see that there is an opportunity. So it was wonderful to be able to host it, because it was just amazing.
Not sure if I answered your questions.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Shirley-Ann. I suppose, and I'm sorry, I know I didn't bring any time with me, so please don't look at it. We've spoken to you and reminded you or told you about what happened. And, you know, we've spoken about this. So what? Why is it important? And I suppose it's the now part. So, guys, time to think. Colm.
Go. Without time to think.
Now what? What needs to
now
happen?
Now what? I mean, big picture-wise, I don't know whether I'm the person to ask. But definitely, I think Aoife said something really beautiful. Like she said, they've been so nourished for 2 years. Why now would you starve? When they've had 2 years of, we can't just leave it at that, which is absolutely fantastic that the wonderful, wonderful, brilliant people in the Arts Council have, we found out last week, have given me a bursary to go in. So I'm going to be working not alone with their Inranga tree, and they're all grown up, and not alone with third class, but actually with other classes in the school, to excavate into and to look at through the fictional lens, maybe making a work that hopefully might grace the stage of Babbaro at some point in the future, but relating to their experience of that kind of dual identity piece and maybe a multilingual or a polylingual piece. And Bri has the most amazing idea that you were telling me earlier on.
Yeah, well, we were talking about, you know, it's when you start a project like this, it's like, how do you leave? Well, what happens when you leave? I'm always conscious when you walk into a project like this. And I was talking to you, Shirley-Ann, at the launch about, wouldn't it be amazing to come back when they're in sixth class, that group, or at that transition, or going to secondary school. you know, partly because it's at that moment you're making decisions about subject choices, about what your future might look like, about, you know, what school you're going to go to. Is it big? Is it small? Is it more other words over the road? You know, are you staying in the vicinity? So to do something like an opera, something where they get to be multifaceted in those skills.
And opera meaning work.
Yes.
As opposed to Verdi.
Yeah. But something that, you know, they've learned how, what it's like to be an author of something in a very safe and experimental way with you, but also to come back and go, well, now I've taken those skills on, what would I like to say with that?
You know? Play one little 20 seconds. And this is Parisa's final line. And I, as well as the thank you to Rita for so wonderfully chairing. This is Parisa, and she really felt this should be, and I think it is only right and good that the last voice that we hear today about, if you want to applaud, that's great, is actually the voice of the young people. And this is what they had to say.
I want to say, I want to do say a compliment, though.
Oh, please. I'm sure they'd like that.
So I really like how there's so much imagination in all of the things Babro has done, Callum has done, and everyone who works there.
Thank you very much. Well done. Good.
Thank you.